Now,
every time Craig comes in, we're always going to have to repeat that line.
The party has already begun. Craig is here. I'm here.
I'm always worried to trust Craig. I mean, he's got 100%
record. Look at his name in the chat. What does it
recording,
say?
Recording Craig.
So you just don't fucking trust Craig or what? What's your
name? I know that Craig is new and he's done a great job, but I still don't always trust Craig. So how are you? This has been a long time. We've been trying to make this happen, but it's busy times.
I mean, is anyone even playing video games these days?
No, they suck now. They suck. They're back to sucking.
Oh my God. Listen to this guy.
They're so happy. Now they're
stuck
again.
He watches two YouTube videos. He goes on TikTok. All of a sudden, video games bad. Now's never been a better time to playing video games.
Prove it.
There are so many good video games out. Are you not playing good video games?
I'm playing good video games. I mean, some of them suck.
Transformers just came out. What an awful time to be a movie fan.
Yeah.
People watch Transformers. Come on, Ryan.
I mean, it's not exactly. I mean, like, if you look at the current lineup of movies that are out right now, it is kind of similar. Of course, there's older movies you could look through, but
there's plenty of good current movies.
And there's plenty of good current games. But not always. I just saw that Dune 2. It was fantastic.
Movies are back. Dune 2 came out. It's saving everything.
The popcorn.
Remember last year when Baldur's Gate came out? When Baldur's Gate and Zelda came out and people are like, video games are so good right now. And then like 6 months pass and people are like, video games fucking suck right now.
I don't know if Baldur's... I mean,
YouTube is
Baldur's
crazy,
Gate,
man.
No, YouTube is totally in the right for saying that because one game a generation does not make, right? So you can't just say, oh, Baldur's Gate was so popular for the fact that it's like the only thing this generation that you could really call...
No, people like Zelda.
A big major step forward. I don't that much, but sure. It's like that Zelda's like a step up the same stairs. It's not like
wow,
really
video
impressive.
Games for me, not for thee.
Yeah. The main
Alan
conversation
Wake
is
2?
Not that is not that games suck. I haven't played it yet. It's not on Steam. Get on Steam first, Alan Wake. The main conversation is not that video games necessarily suck. It's just the popular thing and the thing that I was kind of linking to was that a lot of different YouTubers at the same time were talking about how AAA gaming is terrible. And that, I think, is pretty spot on. It's kind of weird because I before this cavalcade of videos of the Act Man and Gabby Bell and these other like YouTubers have been talking about it and I've been sending them to you, I've just been thinking about how... For you, like there, it used to be that you were excited specifically for AAA games. Like those were the games that you knew were coming out that you were excited for that year, and then the indie games were the little surprise. But
which AAA games in the past were you really excited for?
In the more recent past or the past?
Sure, either.
Like, Destiny. You know,
Destiny.
like going further back, I used to when you and I were teenagers, that was basically like what you played. Like I was really excited in large part for any Blizzard game, right? Like I was excited for any Activision game. I was so excited because Call of Duty was kind of new back then and they were still like the franchise is still like kind of finding its way and everything. I liked the early Assassin's Creeds. There were so many games that were like AAA that were doing it right and were innovating and were the exciting things. And then indie, like obviously the tools back then were so much more difficult for an indie developer. I feel like if it wasn't like sprite based or very small project or mods, indie developers weren't really making that much, right? And then these days the tools have improved so much that AA and indie is kind of where you go more for the highest quality stuff. And I just like when I think about the games that came out this year that people are the most across the board really excited about, they're all like AA or indie, and they're stuff that kind of just comes out. And then I think this is the year where I have seen the most of that flip, where
hardly any games came out this year.
The games that are the most exciting that come out that have come out are the games that you kind of like, they're out for like a week and then you hear like, hey, this Balatro is out. Everyone's just like really digging this Balatro. And that's how you find out about it. Or like a month after Helldivers comes out, is like, this Helldivers, everyone's loving this. What's going on? And then you check that out, and then that's pretty amazing. But like a lot of the things that are more AAA have these, like, they come with these like very immediate problems, I guess. Like I expect problems now. I expect them to kind of come out broken. I expect them to have
weird monetization. Suicide Squad.
Yeah, sure. Like Suicide Squad is like obviously like up is a part of this conversation. I think that even Dragon's Dogma is, because I want to hear more about Dragon's Dogma. But I just think that it's Capcom is doing is generally one of the only AAA developers doing a good job, and it's interesting to see Dragon's Dogma come out. And no matter how your opinion is on it, I'm sure it's going to like be a great. It's a great game, and it's going to get to be a better game in the future when it gets more patches. But to have the PC release come out so like obviously busted is like, why is that acceptable?
That's pretty janky.
The money. It's just weird because the conversation, I think, is definitely when you look at I think AAA games, for almost no fault of one specific, you know, person or anything, like it feels like they've hit this critical mass where they are big.
It's all Bobby Kotick.
Let's level set here. I'm not even gonna say that. They're so like critical mass of like the teams are so
that's
huge.
His fault.
They have no vision. Yeah. Well,
I mean, speaking of no vision, Activision Blizzard. Yeah. That's when it went south. Am I wrong?
Sure. Well, yeah, that's like that's like the real beginning of the end, where you had the final there, like that Blizzard was the studio where their motto was like, you're not shipping a broken game, and they are just gonna even if they spend millions and billions of dollars, millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars on StarCraft Ghost or something, they're still gonna can the project if they feel like it's not acceptable. And then they've just been coming out with shit, with garbage.
Yeah.
After they were bought, it's like even the better companies, you kind of see that where things are just, it's just these huge, massive studios with these overinflated budgets that are coming out broken, that have tons of people working on the team. They have no vision, and that's kind of what I'm talking about. I mean, like it's
weird to be more excited for updates than it is to be excited for games, where it's like, all right, Diablo 4 comes out, whatever. When's Loot 2.0?
Yeah. Almost exactly. Like, I feel like even at its best, a lot of AAA games come out, they're busted, and then people say, like, they get better later. Like Cyberpunk is a really good example. Cyberpunk's like a great example I almost feel like that's the thing now, is that AAA, there's so much money involved in investors that they by the, you know, very nature of the project, have to be rushed, have to come out, have to turn around some money, and then it'll come out later. Like the real game will come out later. They'll make a redemption arc or whatever. And even when you see these really good, trustworthy studios like CD Projekt Red, where everyone has so much faith in them, they did such a great job with Witcher 3. They release a busted, broken product, and then it takes multiple years of patches to make it a real game. And they're like, yeah, see, look at we made a good game eventually. But
what made it work for Baldur's Gate 3? That you think other developers are not.
Baldur's Gate 3 is the example of why things are so. It's the exception, right? It's not the rule. Are the exception. They actually did something that feels different. I think the other part of the conversation, and like kind of the. In the video that I had linked to you today of the Act Man, which was very metered, he's usually a little bit more inflammatory, kind of just said that...
Too many jokes.
Yeah, too many jokes. He thinks that...
Too much meme.
That kind of stuff, he does meme a lot. That it's just kind of multiple different things at once, and I think it's kind of interesting. He kind of points to, like, COVID, the video game sales were up so high that... just generally a publisher, even like a not a greedy publisher, just thinks like, okay, there's so much more money in video games. This is like has been a growing product for so long, a growing industry for so long, and now it's like in its boom town generation. So we gotta put more money into it, hire more people, and have bigger studios. And then the fall off of COVID is like there are more entertaining things to do. People who were stuck inside and had nothing to do aren't quite buying games as much. So like the sales.
I mean that's a little weird. Like to put it that way, instead of just being like during COVID there were more sales, so more people got involved in investing. You know, there are more investors in video games, more shareholders than
it's a bubble.
Demand, you know, a simpler product because it has a wider reach. So, I mean, I think that more than that, it's not just like people are on and then they're off. It's just like money in, money out, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't answer the question, which is
further. Why
do you think Baldur's Gate 3 succeeded? Why do you think that Baldur's Gate 3 had the innovation, despite being such a massive game?
I don't know. It's so interesting.
It's more of a quiz. It's more of a quiz because it has an answer, and the answer is that they're not publicly traded. They're an independent company still.
You just kind of see that kind of like they can take the risk. Like something like Helldivers can take the risk that
Helldivers is publicly traded. That's Sony.
That's Arrowhead. But is it a subsidiary? It's like a subsidiary of Arrowhead Studios. But even then, it seems like somehow they're getting away with it. Somehow they're getting away with
to their masters.
Yeah, but somehow they're getting away with $1, $2 skins and not selling these like season passes and that kind of stuff. Like they made a really crazy product for
I'm assuming that a lot of the contracts and things like that are handled up front. So Sony, you know, maybe they don't expect such a big hit. So it's like, all right, we're going to sell this game for $40. You know, this is the monetization.
Oh, no. So you're saying
like, yeah.
Helldivers 3, you go, you log into it, buy the premium battle pass, pre-order next season for the gusto shot, the explosive gusto shot for people who pre-order for 3 days early.
I mean, there is kind of this weird thing of live service games get to the second one and then they can't continue, right? So yeah. It's just going to be Destiny 2 and Helldivers 2 forever.
Yeah, I think it's also been on my mind because it's like Tekken is like I see these other bigger companies and I just see them like just free falling or just constantly making bad decisions. And it's like, what is going on behind this kind of stuff? I just think it's interesting to look at like the smaller studios are like kind of the more exciting things. I think a lot of the exciting things we'll talk about this week would be like, you know, Inkbound, which is a tiny studio.
All right, well, you brought it up. Tell me about Inkbound then.
So I gotta get the because it's this is the team behind
Monster Train,
and I'm bringing it up, Craig. Just edit this out. Shiny Shoe, and this is a good kind of example of these smaller studios doing something. This is from the studio, like you said, that brought Monster Train. Monster Train was a it's card based. Right, like it is a card based, like deck based. Monster Train is deck based, roguelike, very much inspired by Slay the Spire, but with a couple of really cool twists. And like one of those major twists was that it was like faction based, right? You would have a main faction and a sub faction.
Yeah, and then you'd blend them together, and you'd be able to choose cards from those two decks. And compared to Slay the Spire, Monster Train was way more outrageous. It was way more about encouraging you to break the game in order to succeed.
Yeah, I think Slay the Spire is like pretty conservative with a lot of the numbers or how things. Of course, you can have runs go out of control, but I think even the game is kind of built for that, so that you're not necessarily like one-shotting the last boss unless you have like some sort of lotto build. So insane build that just is so randomly worked out so well. But Monster Train, like you said, I think was kind of built for as a sandbox to go wild and to get some really crazy numbers. So Inkbound's really unique, and it's very different than anything else I've ever played. It's crazy because I think it's very rare that you can't just easily put it into a genre. But I mean, the genre that it falls into the easiest would be roguelike. And like this studio
roguelite
has roguelite roots. Have you played Inkbound?
I played a bit, not a lot.
Not a lot.
I plan to play more.
I don't think that it starts out strong, and I don't think it starts out poor either. It's just that this game is that game where you play as the different animals. What was that game that we didn't like?
Silicon Valley.
No. There was like a game where you like possessed. Nobody saves the world. That's exactly it.
Both answers were true.
Oh yeah.
Although I did like Silicon Valley,
the one in the N64 game, the fantastic yes. N64 game where you're a little chip and you like take over a little robot sheep.
That's right.
Fantastic game. So is it Silicon Valley? Is that really the name?
Yeah, you need the expansion pack to play that game.
Oh, I loved it. But what was I saying? Now I'm thinking about Silicon Valley.
Inkbound.
The reason why I was bringing that up was because Inkbound is a... It has got quests on quests. You are unlocking tons of stuff. The first couple times, this is probably for the best. When you think about the way that roguelikes work, where they're sometimes an information overload, I think that I would just warn people starting out with this game that the first couple runs feel pretty samey. There's not like a lot of choices to make with some of these like passive things. Like you get these like sort of like trinkets, I think they're called vestiges, and they provide passives, and they're kind of something that's going to be the core of what's making your build a build and creating your synergies and everything. And the first couple runs you'll see the same couple ones over and over again, and then you just get to this point where as you're getting quests and finishing these quests, you're getting more quests, finishing more quests, and then you're kind of like, every run, I almost feel like I'm going back to this hub, and and I'm getting multiple quests that are saying, do this specific thing, hit, do 1,000 bleed damage, find a certain NPC on a certain map, don't use this kind of thing.
I love that stuff.
Take this, these two attacks together in the same build or something, like sometimes very specific things. So like it really gets out of control with the quest. I do love that. I really love that because it satisfies that old WoW style old school gamer kind of thing of like you're going on the run, almost a little bit like RoboQuest did this, where kind of every run you're kind of coming back and thinking, whoa, I made a bunch of progress towards this quest, I finished this quest, I just unlocked a new vestige, and the new vestige has synergies with this other build that I like, so like that's always happening. There's I believe there might be more, but I believe that there's four classes at the start of the game, four classes that you can unlock. The classes are very unique. I really like them.
That's very much their style.
Yeah,
I'm creative about that stuff.
Maybe I'll get into that because maybe I'm putting the cart before the horse. So the thing that makes it unique and that it is not just the conversation doesn't just end at roguelike is that it is a... Like, it's hard to explain this almost without seeing it, and even seeing it, I couldn't really wrap my head around this, but it is like a turn-based RPG where you walk around and take your entire turn moving around and attacking, and it even almost works like a Dungeons & Dragons or like a Pathfinder kind of thing, where once you can only move a certain distance from where you were originally, and now if you've made a choice to attack... Like, you've kind of locked in the amount that you've moved, and now you can only move... Like, you've moved 10 units, and now you only have 20 more units left of movement. You play out your entire turn, and there's these enemies on this isometric field that are all kind of attacking you, but they're stopped in time. And then you're lining up skill shots. That's kind of what the game is that you're lining up... you're going to do a circular AoE attack, and you're carefully, time is completely stopped, so you're kind of carefully seeing, like, should I kill this target and this target? Should I get the boss in the AoE a little bit? Can I manage to get, like, how can I get the most bang for my buck? Should I, like, move around a little bit?
It's RPG style game. It's not unlike Baldur's Gate, the way that it, like, plays out.
Sure. I guess it's not unlike Baldur's Gate, but now imagine if Baldur's Gate was like you're controlling only one unit, and it's actually co-op, which is something I haven't done, but you're controlling one unit.
Yeah, maybe we can co-op. That'd be fun.
The game has a ton of, it is like clearly built for co-op. In fact, like, a lot of vestiges and a lot of abilities use, like, the word party, or, like, whenever someone on your team is affected by a bleed or something. So they, so the game very much is built for two-player co-op, I believe. I'm not sure. Maybe you can go more than that. I'm not sure. But anyway, so think about, like, yeah, like a Baldur's Gate, but you are kind of, like, able to walk around freely and play out that entire turn, and then you click go, and then all the enemies do all their turn all at once. And then you're back to your turn. Because of that, I think that there is a... If you think about playing a board game, where... Which is something that you do, for sure. Think about, like, if the entire table took their turn instantly and it went back to you and you had infinite time. Like, it just kind of is like, satisfying in that you really get to, like, you're walking around, you're, like, seeing how many people you can hit with a skill shot. Should you use this ability or this ability? Making certain decisions about how you're going to, like, use your abilities in what order, on what enemies, what has to go first. Should you be slay this, similar to like Slay the Spire or Monster Train, and something you see a lot in these kind of turn-based roguelites is that you see everything that the enemy is going to do to you when they'll take their turn. So you'll see that three of the enemies are going to directly auto-attack you, no way to dodge that. Maybe one, the boss is going to do a big AoE that you can just walk out of the way of so it doesn't hit you. And that's kind of the flow of the game. And then you're going to pick one of these eight classes, and they're all pretty unique. There's nothing that's like that you could just straight up say, like, I guess one or two of the early classes you could probably just call like a barbarian or a rogue, but it gets pretty crazy early on. One of the first classes that I unlocked is Orianna, basically, from League, where you have a ball, and you set the ball on the ground, and then you can control it, and your attacks come from the ball. And you can go in different builds. You could go and build similar to Orianna, almost, where like you get passives or shield if you stay in the zone of your ball. You can like use the ball to go through enemies to AoE to debuff them. So there's some creative classes, and you kind of have like three core class abilities and two that you'll pick up in the run, and then some of the biggest changes to the run and synergies you get are these vestiges that I'm talking about. But there's a lot that goes into the runs. Like, you can have three modifications for an ability, and the modifications are really cool stuff. Sometimes it's, you know, basic stuff like...
I love the modification stuff.
Like, changing... you're making the choices. It's very similar to that HOTS, that Heroes of the Storm kind of thing, where you're getting...
HOTS.
Yeah, you're getting that choice of here's your AoE bleed, so do you want the AoE to be bigger? Do you want the AoE to be smaller, but it does more bleed? Do you want the AoE to proc all the bleeds? Do you want the AoE to stop doing bleed, but do more burst damage? That kind of thing. So you're, like, making a choice.
I think about HOTS more than I should, to be honest.
I do, too, because it was always so good and so fun. It's too bad that Blizzard is too bad.
They have a bad opinion on their own games, yeah.
But then they're just gonna keep trying at Overwatch. Got an Amazon package, German potato salad. So this is a really fantastic game. It's been in early access for a little while, and actually I hadn't heard of it. I've been searching. I've been looking a lot because of my job. I spend a lot of time with a Steam Deck. Here's the negative. I spend a lot of time with a Steam Deck, and I'm always looking for good Steam Deck games. And this game would be a great Steam Deck game. If it were not,
however,
always online.
Ooh, it's an NFT video game. That's not true.
It's not
to say it.
Just joking. I'm just joking. But I think it's interesting because it has been in early access for a bit, but it 1.0 now, and in early access you may not have heard of it, and the reason why was because it came out to extremely negative reviews. Initially, this game, which, by the way, has, like, a ridiculous amount of cosmetics, like, yeah. cosmetics that you are unlocking. I got cosmetics from leveling up. I've got cosmetics more from you buying them with the in-game currency. The in-game mm-hmm. currency, there's
yeah,
not
yeah,
an
yeah.
extra game currency. It's a meta progression currency.
No riot points.
No riot points. And one time, I'm sure there's more of this because this game keeps kind of surprising me. How many hours in am I? 10 hours. Okay, so at one point I found a weapon on the ground, had to take it back to an NPC, and they told me that, like, if I went with a certain build, I would, like, level up the weapon and get access to another class and do all this kind of stuff. So like, there is a lot of cosmetics. There's cosmetics for, you can change the way that you want your Needless, I believe, which is the name of the type of the character it is, to look like. And that's all unlocked for free right at the start of the game. You can change, like, the masks you wear, the hats or whatever, your weapon, the clothes and armor you wear, the, like, trail that goes behind you, pets. Tons of stuff. Like, this game is like a it's a dopamine machine of just constantly trying to give you quests. You're leveling up, you unlocked new vestiges, you unlocked new builds, you unlocked new classes, new cosmetics, new all this kind of stuff. But originally all that kind of stuff was tied to season passes and money. It was all the cosmetics originally were and the initial in early access, the cosmetic currency that you get for free by leveling up and that allows you to get anything you want used to be a paid for currency. And and the game was kind of initially built in such a way that you would that they wanted you to, like, keep putting money into the game and buying cosmetics. There's so many things to like about this game. I really kind of like, one thing I haven't talked about at all is, like, how far it goes with its aesthetic. So you're kind of like, the setup is that you're playing inside of, like, a book, and everything is kind of, it's the name of it, it's ink bound. And everything about it is ink based. The enemies are, like, you know, leaving pools of ink on the ground that hurt you. All the jokes are kind of, like, writing, ink, quill, like, they're all plays on that kind of stuff. And, the, like, quests and stuff that you're doing are kind of based on these kind of, this conceit. You are finding, like, new zones to go into by finding books that allow you to, like, bind them and enter them. Yeah. You are defeating bosses and adding their ink to this like giant machine that's like gonna allow for, like, further exploration. It's a cool setup. It's done quite well. And small studio doing a fantastic job. Budget title. Does not feel like a budget title. And it is. It also, I think another reason why I am enjoying it is because it really has, it's doing, I guess, maybe more of this Helldivers-ish kind of version of a live service game of, like, it feels like it's, like, there's more coming out to it, that there's going to be updates and that there's free updates coming, and that it's, that the game
confirmed?
Yes, and that the game is so modular because of just the core of how it's built. There's missing spot slots on the class section since everything is based around these, like, upgrades that you're unlocking. It's so easy to see, and that you're getting these books that allow you to go to different zones. So everything is modular.
Yeah, and these upgrades that you're mentioning, so this reminded me, if I've got this right about the upgrades, this reminds me a lot of, like, an auto battler sort of style, right? Where you have, like, this class.
Well, this is an interesting thing, because that is something that is an aspect of the gameplay, actually. So one of the more core things, like, there's a lot going on in a run. I really like it. You are making big choices from room to room. The choices you're making, other than the options to, like, modify your skills, the vestiges, like I said, the vestiges usually give you these kind of passives that are going to build out your kit. But, like you said, there's this thing where you'll quickly kind of get overwhelmed with the vestiges and not have enough room in your inventory for them. But there's these, like, things that allow you to grind up a vestige, and all the vestiges have certain traits tied to them. So, like, a generic example of this, like, that I'm just, like, pulling off the top of my head might be, if you have two vestiges that have the shield passive, then at the start of your turn, you get a five shield. You're gonna block
very
five damage.
Very Teamfight Tactics, or, like, a Dota also, what did they call the Dota one? Underlords?
Yes. Right? That sounds right. So you throughout the run, you're going into your, I love to talk about poison builds, right? So you're going about in your poison build, and all of your poison vestiges happen to have a thing that say, that, like, other than the passive, you know, whenever you poison an enemy, gain one shield. Other than that passive, they'll be on the top. Maybe it'll have a shield passive for shielding builds, and maybe it'll have a poison passive for poison builds, and maybe you're one or the other or both, and you want to, like, abuse this passive. And when you destroy the vestige in a in these, like, grinders, you'll get double the count of that, and then the and then you'll see it on the side of your screen of, like, when you have two of the shield passive, it's plus five shield. When you have five of the shield passive, it's plus, you know, 10 shield at the start of your turn. When you have 10, whenever you're shielded, you have spike and you return some of the damage back. Stuff like that. So there's a ton of, like this game really has so much creativity and so many things going for you in a run. It really is the game where by the end of it, you're, like, gonna sound like this Charlie from Always Sunny, Madman, where you have just wires connecting everything, and you're saying, like, what? Or I have a build is poison, bleed, and I have all my bleed that turns into poison, and whenever I poison someone, it gets shield, and whenever I get shielded, it causes everyone around me to get hit with the poison.
Yeah, go play some Cyril M. Ultimate also, and we'll talk a little bit about that.
I recently was at a wedding for low priority, now married. You
have good, good
Mary J.
Steam Deck games.
And I don't know if I told you this, I believe I did, but number one super fan Rob, he said he loves the podcast so much, his favorite thing to listen to, and he said that, like, nothing makes his day more than to be called out. So here's a shameless plug of that. But he was saying that he plays Cyril M. Ultimate. This is some real on the street feedback. He said, Ryan, I'm not going to fucking play Honkai Star Rail. That's what he told me.
Same. Absolutely not.
So wait till later in the podcast when I talk about Honkai Star Rail. But Inkbound
But he will play Cyril M. Ultimate was the point of this.
Indeed.
Is that he loves Cyril M. Ultimate.
Indeed. Crunchy. So you've only played a little bit of this.
You're making me excited to play more, I gotta say.
The one that is the one thing I would want to leave people with is that the beginning is just okay. It's just okay. You will quickly notice from run to run that you're seeing the exact same vestiges, and
I'm okay.
A lot of the mechanics don't make that much sense yet, and then as you're playing the game, you're going out into the world, and then it's in the beginning you'll start out and you have, like, maybe one quest to complete, and then a little while in, you know, you have, like, five quests that are on your screen, then you have, like, six quests, and then, like, you're seeing, like, that as you're doing things, you're automatically unlocking quests that the game just said, like, oh, we didn't even ask you to do this, but you just did 1,000 bleed damage, so, by the way, like, you unlocked an additional thing, you unlocked a content, and, like, this character wants to talk to you back at the hub. I really think that the introduction to this game is just okay, and that as you start figuring things out, the game starts really pushing a lot of new things forward, giving you a lot of things to strive for, and giving you a lot of very specific quests. So you're gonna have to go out with, like, so you might decide, like, this run I'm gonna specifically do certain things to meet certain criteria. I know it's not, like, it's gonna make things harder. I know it's probably not, like, an optimal build, but, like, I want to try and, you know, go for this thing, the certain unlock.
Right on.
Hell yeah. What have you been playing?
So do you want to hear about a game that doesn't have a slow start? Because I will tell you about one. I've played a little bit of Pacific Drive. And by a little bit, I mean 10 hours.
I've been so excited for this.
I mean, like, 10 hours.
I might like this. You said this
game has such an aesthetic. I don't think that there could be a better aesthetic for you. So let me break it down a little bit. They don't really talk too much about who you are, but you are referred to as the driver, and you are a character who finds their way into the Olympic Exclusion Zone, which is an area in the Pacific Northwest that has this massive wall constructed around it. Think of it as like, what are they? It's like an AWE, an altered world event from like Alan Wake, or like an SCP sort of situation. You're saying
Annihilation, or Red Annihilation.
No, but tell me about that a little bit.
Phenomenal, but it has this similar setup. Similar setup.
Yeah, so you end up in the Olympic exclusion zone, your car crashes, and conveniently you find a vehicle in an attempt, and you know, you attempt to get out, but you can't get out. It turns out that the vehicle that you found is a remnant. A remnant is a type of mysterious energy that culminates in something that somebody wants when they're in this area. So it's like, oh, you coincidentally found exactly something that you wanted. There, you know, these are like objects of power. They're these weird objects that Odom. Have.
Or yeah. What was the specific like the SCP kind of thing from that game?
They were called objects of power and control.
Objects of power control. There was.
So your car is this object of power, and the game, you know, there are people who are communicating with you over the radio. The voice acting is incredible in this game, who are like talking you through this and like, oh, you know, go over here and you'll find my workshop. So the core loop of this game is you are going to these different areas. You're traveling through the road and you are stopping in these different areas. You are collecting loot and you are going on quests, and then after you've done a run, you are going back to the auto shop, and then you are looking at the loot that you've collected. You're going down tech trees that are letting you improve the car in different ways, that are giving you access to like better ability to scan for materials. Now your car has this side of the car has more durability. Now you can you know, detect quirks in the car better. Because this other weird thing is that, like, as your car takes damage and as you go out on drives, there will be weird shit that just starts to happen to your car that you need to diagnose and solve, where it's like, oh, every time I make a hard turn to the right, the car doors open. All the car doors open. So if you could figure out the trigger for the weird event, then you can fix it and you get some sort of bonuses out of fixing it. So it's really weird because like the car starts to collect mysterious perks, but you don't know, you need to like diagnose and like troubleshoot what they are, where it's like, okay, if I honk the horn twice, the tire falls off.
Okay.
And you need to like figure out shit like that.
You know, that's in line with, Dredge was a game where I felt like, it really was pretty honest about what kind of things were going to happen in the game, and it was like, oh, it's a little bit Lovecraftian. And I feel like Pacific Drive plays it so close to the chest, like it doesn't really explain what it is or what's going on, and it gives you like very little to go off of. And I think most of the reviews, it's one of those games where it kind of eludes explanation in a lot of ways, where hearing about it, I still have like a hard time understanding what the loop is.
Yeah, so let me break that down exactly. So you're presented with this giant like world map, and the ultimate goal is to try to get to the center of the Olympic exclusion zone. But there are different events like hell tides that are occurring across the map, where it's like, oh, this is an area where there are extreme conditions, so you might want to try to either navigate around those conditions or go into them. So you choose an area on the map, and then you start driving towards it. Then you enter this area. Once you've entered the area, there will be like these randomly generated events that'll happen. So I was in an extreme area recently, and it's like, oh, you are now in a realm of extreme darkness. And the only thing that guides you through this is like road flares and the power of your headlights. So you better have brought good headlights. If you're in an extreme area, that area also contains a stronger wealth of loot. So now you're in a more contained area that has all of these divergent roads, and it's full of mechanical sort of like ethereal monster type things. And you're going through the map, you're stopping at locations like gas stations. Like, you'll find a gas station, you'll go in there, you'll fill up your car with gas, you'll go into the convenience store, and you'll start, like, getting loot. You'll get, like, electronics, you'll get, like, plastics and things like that. And you have a Resident Evil-style bag system where you're trying to, you know, figure out what's the most important thing to carry. Maybe you've upgraded your car to have expanded storage space. Maybe you got into a car accident and you'll need repair stuff for your car. So, you know, you're doing a little bit of crafting on the side there. And then you are either heading towards the objective. So you're selecting the road that you need to go down and you're heading in that direction. Or you're trying to leave the area and get back to home base. And that could be, you know, maybe your car is really damaged. Maybe you just want to, like, turn back. So in the event that you need to turn back, you need to start an extraction event. And the way that you do that is there is this, like, energy that is throughout the map, and you need to collect the energy. And once you do, you choose, like, a distortion point. And the distortion point opens, and then you need to rush into the distortion point, but you need to be far away from it to activate it, which makes sense because then you can't be, like, right next to it, because then you would lose the tension of the extraction. So it starts this extraction event where really bad shit starts to happen. A storm, like a battle royale style storm cloud, starts to suck in towards the extraction, and you need to rush to it. It's getting more and more dangerous. You need to go really fucking fast. So it's the situation where, like, your car is in great danger when you're doing this. So there's always this, like, feeling of tension that extends past just, like, the, oh, I'm gonna, like, lose points. It's like, no. The actual value of, like, this vehicle that you've invested a lot in, maybe there's, like, parts here that are super valuable. You could lose these forever if your extraction goes wrong. So there is, like, this feeling of ramping tension, knowing that you'll have to extract and hoping that, like, you'll get out with all of the inventory space and get back to your home base. And getting back to the home base, the auto shop, is, like, a really cool feeling. And in order to push through the game, you need to plot, you need to sort of, like, go a little bit further into the exclusion zone and then go back and then go in and come back. And that, like, ramping tension is...
Are you going back to the same spots, or is it, like, different?
It changes level? Every time. Everything is, like, procedurally generated.
Okay.
And it changes depending on the...
Your goal is to, like, is like Metroidvania style to, like, unlock certain things to get further in the exclusion zone, or...
Well, you don't need to, like, Metroidvania style it. I mean, to an extent you do of, like, you know, like, oh, I need to venture further so that I can get access to stronger crafting materials so that I can upgrade my car to have, yeah, maybe, like, these types of treads that are going to allow me through this really shitty swampy zone. I need some sort of, like, swampy cell treads. So sure, like, in that way, it's kind of like Metroidvania, but with, like, you know, procedural generation. But it is a game that has, like, a really incredible aesthetic with really nice lighting. The soundtrack is good. The use of color is good. And it feels really cool to be, like, in this giant, lush environment where, like, you'll be going through a dark tunnel and then, like, back in, you know, like, the tunnels have, like, this eerie feel to them. And then, like, coming out the other side and back into, like, the sunny areas is really neat.
So, yeah, you're not really doing any, like, combat or puzzles or anything. You're really... To reiterate, like, the main thing you're doing is you're going back into the exclusion zone. It's randomized. You're trying to, you know, push your luck, get further, get better equipment for your car to make it so that you can make it further and go, like, stay in the exclusion zone for a longer amount of time in the next run. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, you got it. So, and it's like a survival game. Like, imagine Subnautica, but you're driving.
Yeah, so you're not shooting things, you're not... Are there... would it be too spoilery to say, is there creatures?
There are creatures. Yeah, there are creatures, but they are... It's not like a ghost is chasing you. It's weirder than that.
Recently, and I got into a big old YouTube hole of Lethal Company and how wild the creatures from that game are, and how yes. they have these like similar to Rain World, actually, which is a really cool game, where all these the creatures and monsters in Lethal Company have these like crazy AI things, and like they function in different ways. They sometimes have like preferences. There's just one monster that isn't there like a monster that can't see, and then there's another monster that can't hear, yeah. and like they'll kind of hunt together or something like that if they find each other on the map. So there's all this kind of like unique interactions between the creatures, and they work in certain different ways and have certain rules. And especially starting out playing that game, you might have to do a lot of trial and error of finding out the weaknesses, if there are any, for a certain creature or monster, if they are actually even dangerous or not,
yeah.
Or if they have any value. So is this kind of a little bit maybe similar to that, where you're seeing these
yeah.
beings or something, and like sometimes you're trying to figure out, like, is this one dangerous? Is this one not? Is this one helpful?
Yeah, there was one that I thought was really miserable, and then I realized that when it attaches to your car, it starts healing the parts, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. But then later I found something that looked like it, but it was the opposite.
Oh, good.
Like, oh, shit. So it's yeah, like there's definitely a bit of that.
Red touches yellow, you're a dead fellow. Red touches black, you're okay, Jack.
But speaking of Lethal Company, I played a little bit of Content Warning, which is
This was free for the first day, right?
Yeah, on April Fool's Day when they released it, they also made it free. I'm going to crack open a cold one here. There we go.
Oh my God, have you seen the new, the recent Waterloos are out of control. They're the mocktails. They have a mojito, all day rosé, and a pina colada, but really the all day rosé. Oh, it's so good. And they have great seasonal. There's a nectarine peach and tropical fruit.
I've heard of
these. I'm always really up on the seltzer game.
I've heard of these. Content Warning is kind of neat. I don't think that it's as like fully fledged as Lethal Company, which is fine. It's a pretty small game. But the idea of it is that, like, Lethal Company style, you are going into a place that is full of terrible monsters, but instead, you are just trying to record things happening and monsters, and depending on the entertainment value of the footage that you get more money.
This is so interesting. So how does a game gauge it? Is it just like you almost Pokemon Snap style?
Yes.
Trying to figure out like, oh, you got a picture of this creature and it's very dangerous. So good for you. That's 15 points.
Pretty much. Or like, it's like, oh, you're recording something where a monster is doing an attack, or it's interacting with a player, or, you know, that's pretty much it. Or, you know, before you started a scene, you used like the clacker, or like you held the microphone up to the monster and you got to like hear its roar and stuff like that. But it's essentially like you're filming the stupid shit, and depending on how stupid it is, you are bringing it back and you're watching it. And I think that that is really valuable. The idea of like you get to watch what you did. Because so much of Lethal Company is like, oh, remember that time when we were trying to escape and this happened?
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah.
Having the conceit of the game, of a game that's so wild like that, with so much emergent, ad hoc kind of gameplay. And the conceit of it is that you're recording so that you can always look back on like a funny moment or a funny.
Yeah. And it downloads mission. Right to the desktop, which is really nice. But then you're uploading the video, and when you do it, there are like these YouTube comments that'll be like, wow, James is funny. Oh, did you see that spider? I hear they don't like noise. And so you're using the comments that people are posting on the video to give you feedback about how to deal with the monsters, which creative. I thought was pretty neat. Did you watch any of the videos that Nate posted from the game?
No.
Yeah, he posted them in the co-op chat, and I got a real kick out of just rewatching those videos of just like, here's what happened when we were playing, and I'm excited to go back and play a little bit more of that game, even though it is like such a simple game. It is really neat to see just like the grade that the game, like you don't know how good the video is until you get it back. And I think that that's really exciting. Like the idea of like, oh, we captured this really great moment. Hopefully we can extract and get it back and see, is this as good as we thought it, think it is? You know, I think that's a neat idea. So for being like a pretty small game, I think it's really creative. I think that this was a really good idea.
It is a really good idea. It's a great idea just from the kind of core concept of it. But this is also falls in line with the how this year has been so far, where you kind of just suddenly hear, oh, do you hear about this? This thing's out. Like, people are liking this thing. And it's out. And it's small group and whatever, and it's a really creative idea. There's like, what other game is doing this kind of thing?
Do you want to hear about another creative idea? Another
Tell
game
me about that another is, creative idea.
It's so
another
creative
game.
That it can't even exist on Steam. So
it's on not it's, Steam. It's
you have to independently buy this game.
The Clock Tower?
No, it is a game called Suck Up. It is a PC game only, and it is a game that uses generative AI. So the way that this game works is you play as a vampire, and you are trying to get people to let you into their homes. So you are walking around this neighborhood, you're trying to avoid the neighborhood watch, and you're trying to put on disguises to trick people. So you might put on like you might grab a pizza box and knock on the door of someone, and he's like, hello, I'm a very important businessman, and I am really focused on my bitcoins. And then there is essentially like an open prompt for you to either type or speak, and you could be like, hello, I am from the fancy crypto pizza company, and I've delivered you this pizza. Would you like to try it? And then essentially what this is doing is it's communicating. I don't know which what algorithm it's working on, whether it's like a Bard or it's like an OpenAI, but it is actually sending a prompt to like a GPT style AI, and it is trying to figure out like, is this a valid enough approach that this person would let you in? So you're just having a conversation with these NPCs and trying to let them in, and you know, essentially like trying to butter them up enough that they will let you into their house. So the reason why this cannot exist on Steam is that Steam has not figured out where it lands on the generative AI discussion yet, and if it wants to allow games that include generative AI. Because one of the caveats with generative AI is that when you're using generative AI in something like this, in a product, there's a limited number of tokens. Like, it costs money each time a token is exchanged. Each exchange that you have with an NPC in this game is a token. There is a monetary fee that the developer of this game must pay every time that you have a conversation. So it's this very weird thing of like, you're paying $15 for this game, and they're actually giving you 10,000 tokens. So technically, there is a finite amount of this game that you can play. And if you go into their FAQ, they kind of explain, well, this is a game where it has sort of a finite amount of content. And by the time that you've used up all of your tokens, you've probably seen everything. It would take you around 30 to 40 hours, depending on how you play, to use all of the tokens that we give you. They obfuscate that from you. So you're not seeing like a number tick down. It's just like, I guess if you got to the bottom of it, they'll be like, yeah, you're out of tokens. You could like buy more for like $5 or something. But it's a really interesting and weird game. But for now, I mean, this is the only generative AI video game that I've seen so far. But it is kind of a fun idea. And there's this other game mode where you are at this like cocktail mixer where you are trying to break up couples, where you're trying to talk to the AI, and like they're based on popular characters. So one of them might be like Aphrodite or something like that, you know, like an off-brand version of them. And, you know, they're like, oh, I'm in love with, Gatsby or something like that. And, you know, so if you know a little bit about Gatsby, then you're able to be like, oh, I've heard that he's having these crazy parties and not inviting you to them. And you're trying to like break the couple up based on this stuff.
Wow. And this is wild. How much heavy lifting is the AI doing though, really?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, AI is.
It is hard to say, but this is, it's like it's a $16 game. I played through it a bit with a friend of the show, Kevin Cruz, cause he got it, cause he's into these weird indie games and weird AI stuff. So
he would agree with me with what I'm saying. I think he would be saying preach.
That's about right. What?
About the indie devs versus AAA right now, and how great the indie dev sector and AA is just exploding.
Yeah, but also remember that his favorite game is Halo, and he is playing
even the recent Halo one. Infinite. Oh, okay.
He fucking loves Halo Infinite. Everyone playing Halo Infinite at this point loves it because they have added so much to that game. The Forge content also, and just like the capabilities with Forge now are like off the charts insane.
I kind of like that Halo started this, and I hope it's a greater trend in video games, and that is battle passes staying around forever. Rather than getting rid of content, just having a battle pass release, here's all this cosmetics and stuff that you can work for, and it's not going to expire. There's no rush. If you want to come back in 2 months, you can complete it, and I bet when you come back, there'll be more battle passes.
Oh, you mean like Helldivers 2? Yes. Oh my god, can you believe it? These segues are off the chart.
Helldivers 2, I'm in love with. I don't know if you've been playing much Helldivers 2 recently, but I'm so in love with it. I really like the way that kind of stuff happens in world. So what happened recently was that when we first started playing Helldivers, there was this specific mode that they had like launched at the time where you could like Helldivers, you drop on the planet, you try and complete this thing in a short amount of time. And there was this mode that was only this, there was around this limited amount of time where we'd have to go up and start these termicide silos. And it kind of worked like a tower defense a little bit where you would start it off, and then like you'd go to these three towers, do one at a time, start it off, and then as you started it, it would cause like nonstop waves of enemies to come and try and disrupt the tower from completing like the power up or whatever, and being able to let off this termicide, this insect killing stuff. So there was a lot of hints in world about the termicide not doing what people thought it did. And it possibly increasing the production of the bugs, the terminids. And then recently, I was actually on at the time that this happened. So I don't know if this was purposeful or it was really weird. There was a major order to stop the bots, and then this was around for like an hour, and then it canceled the major order for a new major order, which was the planets we originally put termicide on are out of control with constant bug spawn. And now the new mission related to the old mission is that they reused those maps, but now they're completely covered in this like bug gross, like living tissue mass. And you're trying to shut down the towers and destroy all the three towers that are still pumping out the termicide and destroy all the nests and the eggs. So it's kind of a really cool thing of like, as you're playing these new, it feels like these like modes are somewhat related to this ever-evolving story, and that the devs aren't like it's kind of, I just really appreciate that there's not a YouTube video that says, oh, we're doing this. Do you remember, you know, a month ago when you guys did this? Well, it didn't work out well, so we added new maps to the game. These new maps are this, and this is how you play this game mode. But it just quietly happens. I think that it's kind of interesting because every other game, that's a really normal way to for devs to interact with their audience, is to say, this, here's a roadmap, or release a video on YouTube or something saying, this is the new content that's coming out, here's a shot of like the new gun we're rolling out or whatever. And they'll do that for the battle pass kind of thing, which, like you said before, stays around forever, so you're not missing out on it if you're not playing the game right now or unlocking it right now. It'll be around forever, but there'll be these like limited kind of crazy things in the world that'll just kind of happen. Like there was a recent order against the bots where it was one taking over a planet that had like missile silos, and the devs had said if the player base had taken over, they would get a new missile related stratagem. And then there was another one with mines, with a mine factory, and that would have had anti-tank and anti-heavy mines, and the mission failed and the community only took over the missile one, and because of it they only unlocked the stratagem, the airburst rocket launcher, which is this rocket launcher that it explodes at proximity and then explodes into different mini rockets. When it first came out, it was like super bugged, it was actually like constantly killing people, but that's been changed. It's now very effective and very, very fun weapon to use. It kind of feels like you are your own little airstrike with that thing. But the balance is good. There was a recent huge balance change. Balance is important in these games, even though like the community always like whines about nerfs, because that like PvE games, balance matters too. Like it's boring if you find a group of stratagems or equipment that just always works in every situation, and you stop thinking and you just keep taking it into every situation because it always, you know, is reliable. I think it's better, the better balanced the game is and the more difficulty and the more specific tools you need for specific situations, the more that means that you kind of have to work around what your team's bringing, what you're bringing in, and what kind of like difficulty or enemies you're going to start fighting. And I really like that.
Phenomenal. I think the thing that's interesting to me about Helldivers 2 is that it's really, really simple. It is such a simple concept for a game. It's really like a drip feed of content that they make big. Like they make a little bit of content that they drop feel like a big thing. And part of it is that it's spread out. Part of it is just that it's like, oh, you know, there's like this new mission type, which isn't really that different from other mission types. Like, it's like, oh, you got to destroy these striders now. And it's like, all right, well, that's not really different from what we've been doing. Literally, like, you know, you throw like a stratagem at it, it's not too different from destroying towers. Like, but it feels like enough. And, you know, they're also just like, like they're just doing a 3D version of stuff that existed in Helldivers 1, as I understand it. So they already have like all of these ideas that are like battle tested, so to speak, from the first game. And I think that that's like a really good way of doing content. Like with Path of Exile, one of the questions that they got is like, how do you guys release so much content so often? And how did you guys go from having four acts to having 10 acts so quickly when they did that back in the day? And the answer was, we do a lot of recycling, and we do a lot of just like, we make a few adjustments here to something that already existed. You know, we'll change the lighting, we'll add a new effect, and then it feels new, right? So it's like, oh, you know, there's this new planet that's available in Helldivers 2. It's a blue version of a planet you already had. You add one effect to it, you know, you add some tornadoes to it, and it feels like a different experience. So they get away with this, and it works. You know, it doesn't feel like, oh, this is just a reskinned version. It feels like, all right, the core gameplay of this is so good that they don't really have to worry about these massive paradigm shifts in gameplay. They could present the same gameplay with a little bit of different paint, and it's going to be good enough. Because
yeah,
to play, which is all that people want.
I wonder if some of it is also that, like, it is kind of interesting that it's not cloying. It's not like they're not releasing a video that says like we made factory striders or whatever, like this is this new thing, like it just happens. And because of that, like the community kind of finds out about it, and then there's just like I actually know a lot of people in real life that play the game and at work, so I'll just kind of suddenly hear someone say like, oh, did you check online, like there's a new enemy. There's a new enemy going on, like, right now. Or, like, did you check online? Like, apparently, the termicide thing is back. We got to stop that. And they're completely overgrown. And during this kind of, like, mini event, even though, like, they're not calling it an event, bug spawn on maps is way, way high. It's, like, out of control. Bug spawns right now is, like, nonstop. It's just kind of interesting because, like, the community kind of finds it out on its own. It doesn't feel kind of like that cloying of like, oh, look at us, look at what we did. Like, it just kind of happens. It almost makes it feel organic. And I always wonder, like because it leaves a little bit of mystery. It must be wild to be the first person to be playing the game, and then you're just like, you see a factory strider or something. You're just like, what the hell is that? Like, where did that come from? I've never seen that. I've been playing this game for 50 hours and I've never seen this massive like AT-AT kind of monster thing, and it's just a surprise, and like the devs didn't talk about it before it happened, and it just happened. So it just makes you think that like on any given day you could just be playing and see something kind of wild or interesting or
yeah, there is this weird mystery about the game as a result of that. It almost like the way that like early Destiny felt, where you weren't really sure everything that was going on or what could possibly happen. And I think that's dialed up a bit in this game, but there is like this feeling of like the game is constantly changing. So it's exciting to play, because what if you're the first person to see something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that does happen, where there'll be cases where, part of the dev team will show up in a game and generate something that shouldn't be there yet. And then, you know, stuff like that is very cool to think about.
Oh yeah.
I will say that the most addicting video game that I've been playing is not a video game. It is a book. It is specifically an audiobook, and it's video game adjacent, which means I'm legally allowed to discuss it on this podcast.
Legally.
So within the last 2 weeks, I have consumed 20 hours, which is around 600 to 650 pages of Dungeon Crawler Carl. This is my first experience in a subgenre called lit RPG, or like progressive fantasy, which is essentially like this is a book that has the trappings of a role-playing game, but obviously in literary form. And the conceit of this is just incredible to me, and I know that it's something that you would really enjoy. Where it is both like a sci-fi and a fantasy story. It is about this man and his cat who were like outside at 2 a.m. when suddenly every building in the world was flattened, and all of these stairwells opened up underground. And it turns out that, you know, the earth has been taken over by this interstellar corporation, and the world has been turned into a dungeon that is a televised reality TV show, where they need to descend the dungeon and kill monsters in the most flashy way possible in order to get followers and views. And that's effectively how they will stay alive. There is a set amount of time that a floor will exist before it collapses, and they have to get to the next floor. And it is full of like loot. It is, you know, there are tons of like classes and races that they eventually get to choose between. And it is also just like really well written, really funny. And one of the main characters is a cat, so I know you would dig it. But Dungeon Crawler Carl, independent, so not non-AAA. I know that you're into the indie stuff.
That's what you got to have now.
Independently published in a really incredible audiobook. So on your commutes, I would really encourage you to check this one out. I've already gotten a few people in on this, and everyone who I've showed this to loves it. It's got nearly perfect ratings anywhere that you find reviews. You will see that the ratings for this are just off the charts. And I have to agree, the first book of this is maybe one of my favorite books that I've ever read.
Wow.
Just
yeah,
just,
I do gotta check it out.
Just you've been addicting. Its and in, yeah, it is on Audible. It's got like a 4.9 on Goodreads. And, you know, I don't know if you do Goodreads, but people there are like super uppity and like things typically don't have high scores there. But Dungeon Crawler Carl, let me pull up the stats here. You're looking at a 4.54 with 22,000 ratings.
Wowza.
Yeah. It's off the charts. It is really incredible.
Off the charts. You heard it here first.
And equivalent to that also, unrelated to video games, I've been watching Delicious in Dungeon because I've just been really into Dungeons.
I've seen that around a lot. I really want, I think that was on like Netflix or Hulu and I wanted to watch it.
Yeah, it's got a really great cast.
Is it, it's an anime where they're going into dungeons to get food, to get ingredients?
Essentially, like there's a venturing party that lost one of their members, and they need to get back into the dungeon to save her, but they don't have any money. So they're like, well, we can't afford rations on this trip, so we're going to need to go in and start cooking the monsters. And it is just like their story. So it's very funny. And it is, I'm just into the world dungeons right now. I'm into like that they need to descend floors and some of the floors are outside despite the fact that they're going down stairwells to get there. Sort of like this Etrian Odyssey style of like they're descending floors in this dungeon, but it's like this, there's this weirdness where like they're outside versus inside and things are constantly shifting. It's really well animated. The voice cast is great. The intro and outro songs are great. So I've been enjoying Delicious in Dungeon.
I've been enjoying Fallout. Speaking of video games that are not video games, Fallout is phenomenal.
The TV show.
Yes.
Executive producer Todd Howard.
Incredible. It's the best thing Bethesda's ever done. It's really... the best Fallout that can ever be because you don't have to play it. And there's no bugs so far that I've encountered. I'm having such an easy time recommending this to people because regardless of if you like the franchise or not, I easily recommend this. Or if you don't have any basis or like knowledge of the franchise or anything, or you don't even like video games or your LTCP, want something to watch something, there's always, this is a easy to recommend thing if they want something that's like kind of funny, kind of gross, kind of violent sometimes with really great cast.
I watched that first episode and you can't get past the violence. I mean,
that's... yeah, but that is a part of, I think the really cool thing about Fallout and what makes it such a good and what makes it the best video game adaptation, even more so, I think, than The Last of Us, which I think is phenomenal, is that the universe of Fallout and the Fallout games are based off of these miniature stories, and that like you don't generally have a continuation of the story in Fallout. So they are, it's already set up, and the playing of Fallout is that there is a major arcing story, but it's a lot of also little stories, little characters, a lot of moment-to-moment stuff. You're walking around the wasteland, and you meet a certain character that is interesting or interacts in a certain way, which means that it's really ripe for this particular format. It's really ripe for to have it be a show, because you can... have like the elements of the world and the ways that the world works and bottle caps and rads and ghouls and all these kind of things and stim packs and all the kind of stuff that you recognize, the vaults and the Brotherhood, all of it is recognizable to a Fallout fan, but none of it is Uncanny Valley. None of it is I think that it's very hard to do something where you're trying to do that exact story that you experience in a game, even with something like The Last of Us. It's following Joel and Ellie. It is trying to retell an exact story with the exact same characters, but then change some things around to fit it for this format. And Fallout is perfect for that because they aren't telling a story that you've already seen before, but the elements of it you've seen before, that like the trappings in the world that you've seen before. And I guess the difference maybe here is that Todd Howard's on it. Maybe that was like the big thing that changed it, because it is so clear that it knows its source material. It's so clear that source material came first. I think that fans of the series would absolutely like love how often it makes calls to the to the video games, how the references, but it never feels cloying. It never feels like you can't understand what's going on if you haven't seen it. It still does a good job explaining everything to like a new viewer of it, and it's phenomenal. Like, the cast is incredible, the sets and everything, and the CGI and everything. It's like what I would have wanted out of this weird. It strikes that tone that Fallout goes for, I think, effortlessly. It is like laugh out loud funny sometimes, insanely violent and gory other times, and at the end of it all, it's like also these like dark stories about trying to survive a post-apocalyptic wasteland where there's a lot of gray and there's not a lot of like true good or bad, and this does like a phenomenal job with it. Like,
when a character makes a decision, there's not like a pop-up on the side that's like,
says, James Harry
will remember that.
James liked that. If only.
So let me get this straight. This game is not motivating you to play any Fallout games. This doesn't make you think like, well, maybe there's something to this Fallout 4 thing.
I know that Fallout 76 has gotten a lot better from its quite garbage past. But I've never really liked the Fallout games, and I don't like Bethesda in general. I've had like a lot of issues with them as a company, I feel like, which is every game I feel like I've encountered rule or like game breaking bugs and stuff like that, really unfortunate stuff. And I also don't think that I think that they're we talked about this a lot with Starfield too, is like I think that they are pretty outdated. I think that their best work is really far behind them, and that like I played and completed Fallout 3 and most of New Vegas before I had an error that like I think caused me to not be able to progress anymore.
And as you know, New Vegas isn't Bethesda.
That was Obsidian. But it's funny that they're cut from the same cloth. You can't have like a Bethesda.
Did you know that the second season of Fallout is apparently going to take place in New Vegas?
Oh, really? It's cool because
how incredible! I mean, maybe you don't care, but I would be elated to get a remaster or remake of New Vegas, which that'd be cool. I think is agreed upon to just.
I think a lot of people. One. Yeah, and Bethesda didn't do it.
Well, the story and the writing is actually just so much better. Like there, it feels way more gray. Like you mentioned that, and there is definitely like more faction stuff going on. You feel like you're making more interesting choices, where it's not just like I'm doing thing A or thing B. It's like I'm siding with this faction and they feel this way about me, so this is going to happen. And that just unfolds more in New Vegas than in any of the other games. And one of the issue with Fallout 4 and especially with Starfield is just the illusion of choice, where it just feels like you're going down two roads that end up in the same place. And that's not really how New Vegas felt. So hopefully we get something with that. That would be cool. And hopefully they realize that that's what people want. Like, how do you look at Baldur's Gate 3 and think anything else?
It's always so great that it came out right at the time, around Starfield. And like we had said at the time that you would have put your money on it being a bad choice for Larian to release Baldur's Gate around the time that Bethesda was releasing Starfield, you know, 8 years in the making. And like then they just made this completely forgettable thing that like I don't really hear people talking about. I think I was watching a couple kind of hot washes on Starfield explaining like, you know, what happened, what went right, what went wrong, what fans are currently thinking about it. And I think a really interesting litmus test for Starfield is that someone who is doing a breakdown of Starfield and going to explain the story and lore of Starfield tried to go to the wiki the Starfield specific wiki to look up facts, and that there was almost nothing on it, and that the fans, like, no one really cares about that story that much. People don't feel like a sense of belonging or interest in it the way that they might in Fallout, where there's tons of fan wiki stuff. Everything is cataloged, is talked about online, fan theories about everything, and fan fiction and everything like that. Whereas Starfield is just something that came and went. I don't think we'll get a Starfield 2. Not like, you know, doing anything. And it is a different thing. I don't even know how I started this, what the initial relevance of that was. But yeah, I don't think I would play Fallout. I have heard a lot of good things about the direction that Fallout 76 went in, even though it was, you know, miserable to start with. I know that there's a lot of cryptids, which I think that kind of stuff really fascinates me. I read someone talking on a YouTube video about Fallout 76 cryptids. Someone said that they had been playing Fallout 76 since launch and hadn't seen some of these cryptids, and that they're so rare spawn rate that you might never see them. And that's really cool to, like, have stuff like that. I think that yeah, goes.
John
akin
has been
to
playing that show at that that game show a ton.
Yeah,
John's been playing
that's
a lot of Fallout 76.
To, like, what we were talking before of, like, you know, this is something that's, like, bespoke or interesting in the world that makes it feel like kind of unique or lived in a way that you might see something that is, like, always interesting or surprising.
Yeah, I guess it looks like since April 18th, John has played 68 hours of Fallout 76. That's a lot. He's loving Fallout 76. I think it's a pretty good, I mean, if you can tolerate the gameplay, then it's good. Because it is just the gameplay of Fallout 4, but applied to a large area.
Mm-hmm. But I never particularly liked that. I just never felt like the game portion of it was good enough.
It's not great.
I also think that not some of my other, like, I know I, like, shit on Bethesda a lot, but I have actual complaints to why I shit on them, and that's because I just noticed that these are the types of games where you just start re-seeing the same things over and over again. The mystery of their open worlds, like, really falls apart rapidly when you start to notice that, like, the map is made up of maybe a couple set pieces, but then you start going into the same dungeons or caves or the same subway stations or whatever over and over again, seeing the same enemies, the same drops, that, like, you're seeing the same stuff kind of over and over again, and it just, you know...
With you at all, but I will say that dungeon problem is prevalent in every single game ever, including, like, darlings like Elden Ring, right? Where you're going into...
Elden Ring had that particularly bad.
But, and people will jack off over that game. They just do. People, I mean, these days, people jack off over any game. You know, the crowd goes wild.
Stellar Blade!
Don't even get me... Well, no, see, the problem with that game is people thought they were going to jack off, and now they can't. So now they're all mad.
Yeah.
I'm sure I don't have to regale you with the air quotes controversy about it.
Oh yeah, no, they had, like, slightly nerfed.
All your favorite YouTubers are talking about it.
You know, we talked a lot in the beginning about AAA studios and everything like that, and I feel like we don't talk about this sometimes because there is a certain voice that gets tacked onto this a lot that I do not like. There is a fervency. There is a zealotry that goes along with video game criticism, especially of AAA companies, that I feel uncomfortable putting my voice next to. There was an episode, I was reminded of an episode of Superstore where they were protesting, I believe it was that there was no paid pregnancy leave or child leave, like post, like, pregnancy, maternity leave, as it were. And they were, I believe that they were protesting that. And then someone put on their Twitter, like, hey, everyone show up for this protest. And then a ton of people showed up. But people started saying that, like when the cameras came, the people that weren't related to the store Cloud9 were getting in front of the cameras and saying that it was about, like, that there shouldn't be all gender bathrooms, and that it was about, like, stopping trans rights. And I think what that reminds me of is this kind of thing. People kind of, it's sometimes hard to be, like, the voice of a protest or to say things, because then it gets you lumped in with other people. So there's a lot of people legitimately saying that these companies are making mistakes and they're very greedy. And then there's that same person who would be like, yeah, and they keep like taking out jiggle physics. I should be able to jerk off to any of these characters or something. This kind of weird, bizarre person that is like, oh, you know, maybe, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but the other things I agree with, because that is the other part of it, is that there's been this like that same person that's been saying just AAA companies are ruining games. My games are horrible. You know, like they're the ones sending the death threats, and then like there's this constant thing whenever a video game character comes out that's female that's not like, you know, skimpy enough or attractive enough, that they're like, all these AAA devs just want these ugly woke characters. Why can't, like, they're just, have you seen the Twitter, the Twitter user that just uses AI to fix characters from video games to give them like,
fix. They're yeah, so, it's yeah, so like, cringe. It's, it is and, like, and, the but
that
shit.
Is like, I, it's hard to tell if that's a joke, because that is, there is a type of person that is exactly that. That is like, I want to be like aroused, I don't think they're by joking. Every video game character. I don't think they are joking, but I'm just saying that like, that is like a thing. So it's like, I think that they were like the canary in the coal mine almost. And then now the more reasonable people are like, yeah, AAA games and studios with these larger budgets are kind of like messing things up. And that those people that have been saying, see, I've been saying it all the time, the whole time. And also, like, I should be able to take off all the clothes on my WoW characters. Like, I don't, yeah, I'm not exactly that person, but I see where you're going with this. I get it, but maybe you were cooking a little bit too early, but is that video games? Or is there more? The Tekken disaster, there was a
video games. We're covering mass media right now. We got
did
it all.
You see any of Japan Evo?
No. I'm kind of tepid on Tekken. This is an issue I have. DLC gets released for a game, for a fighting game, and then I'm just less interested.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because the character ends up being overrepresented.
Yeah, that happened a little bit with Eddie, but did you, is this like a, you just had it in your head and you thought that you didn't want to deal with Eddie online or whatever? Because I don't think that you actually went online really after Eddie, but
yeah,
you haven't been playing a lot of, yeah. I think that for me, I actually hate it specifically when it's like Mortal Kombat, and then Mortal Kombat starts getting like Peacemaker and, you know, Jason and Freddy Krueger and stuff, and then I'm just thinking like, yep, this game is not for me anymore. But like Tekken got Eddie, and what better character to be the harbinger of disaster than Eddie, where so much got messed up in that patch. There are so many problems, so many new issues added to the game, so many balance changes that the community hated. Tekken 8 is a great study for almost all of this, because when Tekken 8 came out, there was no Tekken shop and there was no like microtransactions or anything. And I think the initial reviews, like it allowed Tekken to come out onto Steam with these overwhelmingly positive reviews, and fans are just like, this is great, you know, the game feels very feature rich and feature complete, and I want more from it, and I really like that there's not this, like, it doesn't feel greedy like a lot of these AAA games. It's a $70, you know, full price game. There's no, you know, buy here, there's no battle pass, there's no none of this. And then a month later, lo and behold, grimy, they add a battle pass, and it is the worst battle pass in history. It is so funny. It doesn't give anything new to Tekken 8, really. It gives a lot of like things that clothes and costume things that existed in Tekken 7 that came back in this battle pass. They were already, you know, they were free on the disc in Tekken 7, and they have no like theme. So there's like a plague doctor mask. There's like shoes and like sandals and socks. There's some beach clothes. There's a karate gi with wristbands. The final thing on the battle pass, like the level 60 battle pass, the like you grinded it out and made it to the end of the battle pass, is karate gi with wristbands for females. And maybe you would recognize this because the game has already on the disc karate gi with wristbands on the male characters. So all they did was put that on the female characters. It's nothing could almost get lazier than this. Maybe the only thing that could be lazier than that is if you release Ball. There is if, when you open.
Well, you can do with that Ball.
When you open Blender, as I understand this, when you open Blender, the 3D modeling program, the first thing that you see is a ball for you to sculpt. So immediately you can open the Blender and see Ball. And in Tekken, one of the unlockables on this battle pass, the only, I believe one of the only, if not the only really new thing, is Ball. And Ball, you can just, you know, you can put it on the character somewhere or color it or make it float next to you, but it's Ball. And like that is, it's so sad to see that current state of things.
I mean, sounds like there's a lot you could do with Ball, though.
There's things that people do with Ball. People make bug eyes with Ball. People make, you know,
do Mickey Mouse food
things with Ball. Mickey Mouse, sure, they make things with Ball, but it's pretty sad. Like, you shouldn't have to pay for Ball. That's like the first thing that, like, it's just, why is that in the game for a pay thing? And like,
I'm going back to Guilty Gear.
There's a lot of bad things. Yeah. Oh yeah. Are you gonna play Slayer?
No, I think I'm gonna play Asuka.
Wow.
And Jacko.
Wow. Were you watching some of the Guilty? Because there was also Guilty Gear.
You know, I like the weirdos.
There was also Guilty Gear at Japan Evo.
Or, you know, maybe I'll wait for the Street Fighter patch and play the, who was the first DLC character? Poison
Aki?
Character.
Aki was as one of the
Aki.
First.
Yeah, I'll characters. Go back and play Aki.
There is a big Street Fighter patch coming. I was actually recently playing Street Fighter, and Ed is my character. I'm really excited. I really like him, and he would have been my pick.
Yeah, so maybe we'll play some Aki versus Ed, but I feel like I'm a little cooled on Tekken for now. I enjoyed it. I thought the systems were great. I'm just, you know, I'm kind of over it. And I just, like, I don't have a lot of time right now. So playing a fighting game, it's, you know, it's a time consuming genre.
The fans hate it. Fans are very upset, are extremely upset with the current version of Tekken. It's in a pretty bad spot right now. The Japan Evo is kind of sad because, I think that fans, since Tekken 8 got announced, they were really worried about it becoming, and that since Michael Murray has taken over as like a lead designer, that Tekken is becoming more and more as a 2D game, really, and disincentivizing movement, because devs kind of thought their thought was that the moving around and the poking and the slow gameplay and the spacing and zoning was boring, and that they liked, like, in your face crazy stuff, exciting stuff, 50-50 is so at the highest level now, like with like the Japan Evo grand finals, you won't actually see a lot of movement. You mostly see one person do their thing, the other person maybe blocks it or maybe gets hit, then they try and take their turn back, then they do their thing. But offense is kind of so oppressive right now that Tekken is kind of a 2D game a little bit.
Yeah,
like, it doesn't really reward.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I mean, it feels, the sidestepping also doesn't really, like, feel so good. People were saying it was good at the start, and people were like, no, you just have to learn it. And then, you know, people learned it, and they're like, no, this is pretty bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, no need to get too into the weeds on it. I will say, I feel like if we ever see Project L, that will be one that I stick with, just because I love that roster so much. And speaking of... loving the roster, you know, we've seen some gameplay of the new Hunter Nen Impact, which people were worried that it was going to be another shitty arena brawler, and safe to say, at least it is a 2D fighting game 3v3 that I personally think looks pretty bad, especially as someone who loves Hunter, but people who have played the game are really excited about it. But that could also just be YouTube hypesmen, so we'll see.
They are excited about it, but they also keep calling it a kusoge. They're saying that the game is kind of shit and unbalanced, and that it's kind of fun in that way. Like, I think it reminds people a lot of a game type of game that doesn't come out as much anymore, which is like a Marvel 2 kind of thing, or Marvel 3 also. Like, it's a 3v3 battle game where it's just going to be like probably horrendously balanced and have tons of like week one unblockable insane setups and lock you down.
So
forever.
DNF duel.
So well, yeah, but DNF duel, but with three people, 3v3.
DNF duel.
That's what you can just say Marvel. Which is interesting.
I mean, I liked Marvel. That was fun.
Yeah.
You got your Super Skrull. You got your beautiful Joe. Why not?
It's interesting because, like, we don't get a lot of tag games, and next year there's going to be two tag games.
Mm. Oh. And it is crazy to me that now you're seeing the DNF Duel releasing the characters, the Battle Mage, Brawler, Spectre, the Monk is just released. Crazy to me.
Poor DNF Duel.
No.
Or, well, it's really Nexon. It's like poor aiding. I feel like they could have done more with it, but that I feel like Nexon just thought this was a product to create and dump, and then it, you know, sold better than they thought, and then
it was a beautiful game.
Then after they saw the sales, they said, like, now okay, like, this is performing better than we thought. Like, we should have a team doing DLC. We can make more money off of this. People actually do want this. They like this. But it was too late because they should have done that before.
Yeah, do more sooner. You know, we've got a lot of games with some updates coming, though, that I'm excited about. You know, we've got the some Pal World is chugging along. I don't know if you saw any of the new designs. The new designs look so much better than the current design.
I have not.
They just announced like four new creatures, and all four of them look really cool. I especially love they've got like this little magical frog that's like in a like a karate frog that I think just looks great. I hope they redesign a lot of that game, and I hope they add more to it. I feel like Pal World still has a lot of untapped potential. I mentioned Cyrillim Ultimate. The development of Cyrillim Ultimate has resumed with new game modes and some really nice quality of life features on the way, including this is exciting for a few people, but not many, story skip. The story in that game is absolute trash, so the ability to skip it is going to be great. Especially if you're someone like me who wants to get back into Cyrillim Ultimate, but trying to remember everything about it is confusing and feeling like it would just be easier to start over. So I look forward to having a story skip. Hades 2 wrapped up its early access cycle, and they are shutting down it's going into early access very soon. They're going to shadow drop early access on it as soon as they close up the alpha.
Why did it go into alpha? Like, what is there? I'm not entirely sure. Like, what is there to test? Because it's not I feel like usually when people, I'm seeing a lot of weird games go into like alpha especially. Like, of course, early access. I think that's fine. But alpha is kind of weird, or like an alpha or a beta, because it's not PvE. You're not like PvP. It's not like you're testing out things. It's not like is it always online and they have to test out something? Like, what are
it
they?
Could be they're afraid of soft locks or something like that. Something that could really just like ruin someone's experience or in the early access. So I think, you know, and it was really short turnaround. They were just like, all right, yeah, it works. We're just going to throw it out there for everyone. And like I said, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to try to have enough willpower to not play Hades 2 until it's launched. Because, man, I would love to be playing Hades 2, but I do not think that I need to play it in early access. I think there's other stuff to play. There has been
to me with Ender Magnolia, actually. Like, Ender Magnolia has overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam, but it's a single-player Metroidvania, and I believe even when I had originally purchased Ender Lilies, like, there was still some more content that was supposed to come out, some more bosses and fleshing out, and I just, like, I especially don't get it in this terms, the idea of playing a single player game and then just getting to a point where you just hit a screen that's like, thank you for trying, like, you know, more content's coming here soon. Like, because I'm not going to come back to that.
I could go back to Hades, like, because it is a roguelike game, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to wait for the full game, and then I'm just going to no life Hades 2 when it comes out. That's the way that life is supposed to be. Games on the horizon. Let's talk about some games we're excited about. I'll tell you a game I just bought that I'm excited to try is, where is it? You know, you buy a game and then you immediately lose it. It leaves the store page. So bear with me, Craig. Craig is going to cut this out for us.
You know, what I could say is I'm excited for Hyper Light Breaker. I'm really excited for that. I love Hyper Light Drifter. And I cannot wait for more of that. That's been a long time, because I didn't like the last thing that Heart Studios did, I think. Crowsworn, Wild Bastards looks really good.
Have you heard of Nordic Ashes?
I believe I have. What? Explain that.
It is a Nordic sort of like god-style version of like a Vampire Survivors, but with like tech trees and a ton of unlockables, like 150 different like passive slash relics. I'll see. I've been back into Vampire Survivors, and I feel like it is really challenging to go up against Vampire Survivors, because that is just a game that is so packed to the brim with content and unlockables and just like dozens of characters, scores of characters. Yesterday I unlocked a new character, and there's just so many characters and levels and stuff to unlock in Vampire Survivors. And that's all I want, is I just want to unlock the next thing and then try it out. Like, see, what does this character do? What is the weapon that they come with? What are their secrets? And, you know, so I'm still just playing Vampire Survivors. And there is new Vampire Survivors expansion on the way, where it's going to introduce a bunch of content from Contra called Operation Guns, which is dropping in 11 new characters, 22 new weapons, I think at least 3 new maps. So, man, they're just releasing stuff. And there is an announcement for the game that I am most excited about this year. Now that Dragon's Dogma 2 has come out and is, I'm pretty tepid on, which is Streets of Rogue 2.
You're tepid on that?
I'm tepid on it.
Oh, okay.
I'm tepid on it now.
I thought you were hyped at the beginning. That's really, there were straight up issues with the game, with like the way it ran, and that's one problem, right?
I'm running but into crashes actual... now.
Oh, okay.
I'm Last running night? Into crashes.
Okay.
I'm feeling the lack of variety in the enemies.
Last night, you must have revenge procrastination, right? Where like you're supposed to go to sleep. You're like, I know I gotta go to sleep, but then you're like, this is my time. I have to wake up early. Like, this is my time. I'm this is the best time. I have to be able to play my video games now. So like I always do that. I'm on my Steam Deck. I'm sitting in bed. I should be going to sleep. And then I'm like, you know what? I should really play, because I bought it knowing that I would want to play the end product of this, No Rest for the Wicked. We haven't talked that much about this. This is a isometric rogue. No, sorry. This is actually not a roguelike. An isometric Souls-like. And it's by... Who did this? Right?
The team behind Ori and the Blind Forest.
Oh, yeah. Moon Studios. So that recently released, but I think it's another one of those, like, it's a single player game, but it's an early access. There's probably more coming out. You might hit like a wall, or there might be like zones that aren't essential to complete the game that are not in it yet. And, you know, will eventually, and the game will eventually be better. But, I was playing it. I had bought it a little while ago, but I didn't play it because I was just like, you know, maybe I'll just wait till it gets completed. But I was like, you know what, let me give it a chance. Let me play a little bit. I played for like the first 30 minutes or so, and I got up to the first bonfire and it crashed with this text, the bonfire text saying that you can save here, and it crashed the whole Steam Deck. It wouldn't even let me open Steam or anything. I had to just completely like hard boot it down. Like, what a heartbreaker. 30 minutes. That game is not ready. It is not good on Steam Deck. It is bad on Steam Deck. It runs, it'll go down to like 5 frames a second, especially with the weather effects. Like, it starts out where you're on this boat, and inside the boat, it runs pretty smoothly and has this very unique, weird, kind of gross looking art style. These people have like these like long gorilla arms that kind of like reach down, and they all kind of like, it almost reminds me of like Dishonored, the way that they look like these like sickly Ahab, you know, whaling era pirate and ship seafarers. It looks good, but then when you go upstairs to the top of the ship and you're on the deck, it is like chugging on the with the rain. It does not look great. Very unfortunate. I hope that gets better. And then in the same breath, A game that I've been looking at for a long time that's been this like weird guilty pleasure to look at all the time that I've been interested in, but has gotten had such bad Steam reviews, but at 1.5 and with a lot of new content and fixes is Lords of the Fallen. Have you heard about this?
No, I have not heard that there was an update to Lords of the Fallen.
Yeah, October 13th, 2023, Lords of the Fallen was like a sequel to another game that I think was almost like maybe Lords of the Fallen was also called Lords of the Fallen or something like that.
Recent reviews last 30 days still mixed.
Still mixed, but a 1.5 came out. I don't know if there's been enough time for there to be like 1.5 came out April 24th. And that had a bunch of like bug fixes and making the game run smoother, if you look at the mixed reviews, a lot of it is like, this game looks so good, but it runs like shit and it like bricked my PC, or like this game crashed on me during this fight. It's super janky. So a lot of the actual things are pretty positive from like a gameplay standpoint, from an aesthetic standpoint, really unfortunate port PC, either like PC port issues or just generally like poor optimization. I'm reading right now, super janky and not a good way. Seriously,
I don't want to play another stuttering game. I'm tired of stuttering games.
Well, I mean,
computers are so strong now. Just stop stuttering.
Yeah, from what I had played, I played like the first hour or so last night, and it ran perfectly fine and was really interesting and cool. I guess like it's a Souls-like, and a lot of those aren't quite as good as like, you know, Lies of P if they're not from actually FromSoft. But one of the cool things about this game, other than just it does a good job with this.
You beat Lies of P?
I did. Remember?
Cool.
Yeah, I did. One of the more interesting things that I could say right out the gate of this game is that there's this whole mechanic with this like lantern, and it looks so cool aesthetically, you'd have to see it, but it kind of taps into this other world when you hold it up. So imagine you're walking down this this regular, you know, castle interior, this stone and like brick and mortar area, but as you hold up the lantern, everything that's illuminating is actually like covered in like pulsating veins and stuff like that. And as you're walking, this wall without this lantern just looks like a wall. You come across it and illuminate, there's actually like a door there. So it's kind of cool. It's like almost not that this is like the most unique thing, but I haven't really seen a Souls do this kind of thing where there's a light in the dark world, and you're able to like access the light in the dark world at any point in time while you're playing. And there is mechanics or areas or zones where you might have to like pull it out and find that there's like a dark world door or a light world door, and you can actually like go straight into only the light world or only the dark world. If you're in the dark world, the monsters are harder and your health is ticking down. So there's like a almost extraction thing of like, I have to, even though it's a Souls game and you want to play it slow, there's sort of a push. Like you must move. You got to get out of. You got to do whatever you're supposed to do mechanically or dungeon wise, puzzle wise, and then get out of that dark world to get to safety, so your health isn't ticking down. So there's. I'm a little excited about it. I've been looking at it for a little while, and the aesthetic of it and the combat of it, I feel like I really dig it whenever I look at it, and it pops up a lot as like my recommended Steam, but the reviews have been like real bad for a while, or at least mixed, because really when you look at it, largely it seems to be based on a poor optimization and crashes. But my PC is great, and especially considering this 1.5 seems to be like a lot about stabilization, making the game run better. I will say, you know, at least for that first hour, 144 frames, no dips, no problems, did not have like a single error in terms of that. I don't know if that means anything. Maybe the initial areas were optimized and ran fine or something, but like I did have that classic Souls moment where you walk out of that initial dungeon and you just like see really far out in the distance, and it was running at 144 frames, no problem. So I don't know if it's the optimization problems don't affect me as much because my PC is a little bit newer and runs things a little better, or the 1.5 did in fact change it enough. I want to give it a shot. I want to give it an earnest shot.
Enjoy. Yeah, I don't know that I'm looking for that type of game right now. I'm the I'm only not... I'll souls myself back when Elden Ring DLC comes out.
Sure. I don't imagine people are going to be like losing their minds over a game that came out in 2023 to mixed reviews. But here it is, the games that talk about the story constantly fighting their way back. Hexworks, the developer, still releasing content, still trying to get this game figured out. Maybe it's in a good spot now.
Good for them. Those are video games. WTDGpodcast.com. That's what you're listening to. This is our episode for, May 1st. Thanks. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Craig. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you, James.
Thank you, everyone.
Is there anything else we have? I mean, like, I feel like...
Craig, stop. Stop Craig. Recording, Craig.
Craig, we pay Craig by the hour, so I'm kind of worried about it. Like,